Good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he must be! And it is! Peter Will!
Hello, beautiful people. Do not adjust your sets. This isn't officially a Gather Round Again podcast, although it kind of is, because for lots of reasons this week, unfortunately, we've been unable to put out our regular show, but we wanted to make sure that you had something, and we wanted to join you and make sure that we could talk a little bit about Aston Villa 2, Tottenham Hotspur 1. So we come to you with love from our, we're sending love to Andy, we're sending love to Cole, particularly this week as well, and to all of our other Aston Villa brethren. Gather Round Again is an Aston Villa podcast brought to you in association with underagaslitlamp.com. Please like, subscribe, and do all of the things while we talk about all the glory that is Aston Villa. It is a wonderful time to be alive. 2023 has been a fantastic year for Aston Villa. You can't even say it's been a roller coaster ride. It hasn't been a roller coaster ride because roller coasters go up and down. Aston Villa have gone up, up, up. And it's just incredible. We now sit, let me take a breath before I say this. Aston Villa Football Club now sits in the top floor. The top floor? Yes, the top floor of the Premier League in fourth place. If the season were to finish today, we would be qualifying for the Champions League. Now, of course, the season does not finish today. We still have a long ways to go, but that doesn't mean that we can't enjoy where we are today and make sure that we have a good time and appreciate all of the wonderful progress we've made under our owners, all of the wonderful progress we've made under Unai Emery, and all of the wonderful progress we've made, actually, you know, as a fan base. It feels like after things started to fall apart under the Steven Gerrard era, it feels like we're a Villa family again. It feels like we're a Villa community again, and long may that last. So we've had an international break. I don't know if we've seen you since the since our last league win, which we put Fulham to bed before the international break. Wonderful little bit of stuff there. Now, international break was interesting. Ollie Watkins we saw showing up for England. Unfortunately, he didn't play brilliantly, but England also didn't play brilliantly. Super John McGinn was doing Super John McGinn things. Just like water is wet, our beautiful wizard Bertrand Traore managed to find himself again injured. Shock horror. And we had some other fantastic news for our buddy Douglas Luiz, who was able to represent Brazil again for the first time in a little while. Fully deserved from Douglas Luiz's point of view. And Boubacar Kamara also made some appearances for France, not to mention Yuri Tielemans for Belgium. So yeah, just worth saying, because why not say it? Aston Villa have Brazilian, French, Belgium, Spanish in Pau Torres, and also England internationals. Pretty cool, right? Pretty cool. So the international break was what it was. Everybody came back in one piece except for Bertrand Traore, but he doesn't really play anyway, so no great shakes there to old Bertie. And it was a big game. We're coming up against a Tottenham side that had lost two on the spin. A Tottenham side that had been touted by some in some quarters as potential league winners. This was, for my money, this was always a little bit fanciful. The idea that Tottenham were in some kind of title race, I think, was always a little bit of a stretch. I think that they had a very easy run of fixtures to start the season, and that's taking nothing away from Ange Postecoglou. He's come in like a house on fire. He's done very, very well. He's revolutionized the way that Tottenham play, and he seems also like a thoroughly decent bloke, so, you know, no problem with that. But I think there's been a little bit of disquiet, certainly amongst some Villa fans, about the kind of level of attention that Tottenham, in particular this season, and also still Chelsea get, which seems disproportionate in the face of the recent success of teams like ourselves, Aston Villa, and also Brighton and Newcastle. So, although I hate to say it, this kind of yardstick of the traditional Big Six Well, even that term is actually a little bit ridiculous, because where is that line drawn? When did tradition start? Are we talking about the last 5 years? Are we talking about the last 10 years? Are we talking about 20 years, 30 years? Because, you know, 20 years ago, Manchester City were in the third division. 15 years ago, Spurs were nowhere to be found. So it's these kind of things are sometimes a little bit arbitrary, and it gets a little bit annoying. You know, there was a time where Leeds were towards the top of the table. There was a time where Sheffield Wednesday were towards the top of the table. There was certainly a time at the beginning of the Premier League era where Aston Villa finished second and were competing for the league title. So this idea of this traditional Big Six is always a little bit annoying because it's a load of old tosh. Particularly as no one really seems to know when the timeline started for when this tradition began. But anyway, the point is Chelsea have fallen somewhat and continue to struggle. Tottenham have fallen from where they were. And it seems as though the national media, much to the chagrin of many Aston Villa fans, hasn't necessarily completely caught up with that, hasn't necessarily completely got the memo in regards to the wonderfulness of Aston Villa and the strength of our squad, and most of all, the strength of our manager in Unai Emery, who is, without question, one of the very best managers in the Premier League. No doubts over here. So I know that Andy had mentioned that the Ange Postecoglou kind of loving at the beginning of the season had gotten a little bit irksome for him. And I can see why. But here's the thing that I would say to quell those qualms, if you will. Cream always rises to the top. And Mr. Unai Emery is the cream of the crop. And he is rising. And much has been made as well in the national media again about the injury problems that Spurs have been facing, some of those self-inflicted with the playing style, and also self-inflicted in terms of some of the suspensions for reckless challenges like Romero makes on a game-by-game basis. Newcastle also have some injuries, but no one really has even mentioned the fact that Aston Villa have lost four starters, other than Villa fans on the Villa podcast that I watch and other Villa fan channels. There you'll hear we've lost Tyrone Mings, our former captain and starting centre-back. We've lost Emi Buendia. Jacob Ramsey has yet to start a Premier League game for us, one of our most important midfielders. And also Emi Buendia, again, up until the summer, our record signing, for goodness sake, our biggest purchase in the history of the football club, prior to Moussa Diaby's arrival, he also has not kicked a ball this season and probably won't kick a ball this season. And no one, certainly in the national media, seems to have noticed this or cares to notice. And so I can see why that kind of thing starts to get a little bit annoying. But now the good news is we're seeing with Unai Emery that he's beginning to make us inevitable. He's beginning to make Aston Villa undeniable. He's beginning to make sure that we can only be seen. And I will absolutely say that I'm all here for it. Hello to Mark Jarobi. There you go. Big Flange will be fine once he gets back from injury, but agreed, injuries only matter when they happen to Spurs. And that's kind of the thing, right? It seems like we don't get an equal look in, and it seems as though we're kind of like people only sometimes take a kind of cursory glance at what's going on with us and what's going on with our Aston Villa, and it just seems a little bit unfair from time to time. But as I say, I'm really confident that we're going to continue to become inevitable, undeniable. We are going to force these people to talk about us, and we're going to force them to look a little bit deeper. Don't even get me started about this kind of high line stuff that people like Dion Dublin, who got a lot of love for Dion Dublin, particularly his Home Under the Hammers expertise. But there has to be a little bit more attention put on Aston Villa now, and I think that there will be, particularly in the coming weeks. Bournemouth up next, and then we obviously have Man City and Arsenal in the Premier League, not to mention our opportunity to cement our European future later this week with a win at home against Legia Warsaw, and we'll talk about more of that later on. But I do have to get to the main event, and that is Aston Villa going back to the new White Hart Lane and beating Spurs by 2-1. Let's start with the starting 11 that was selected by Unai Emery. As if like magic, it appears. So some surprise. The biggest surprise, I think, was that that Tielemans, after two really strong performances before the international break, lost his place. Tielemans was dropped. Diego Carlos brought in. Ezri Konsa has shifted to right back. And then our good old Polish Cafu, Matty Cash, sent to right midfield. And the rest of the lineup would be much as you would expect it to be, other than Zaniolo, who I didn't mention earlier in my international mentions, who got injured as well on international duty, but did also turn out for Italy. So Zaniolo unavailable. I'm not exactly sure the extent of his injury, but we did see a return to the bench of Jacob Ramsey, and Moreno also was on the bench too. So a really interesting lineup. Now, we've seen this lineup a couple of times away from home. The biggest success that we had with this lineup was earlier in the season, where we had that 3-1 victory against good old Burnley, Vincent Kompany's Burnley, who are struggling, it's fair to say. And that lineup worked. Absolutely worked really, really well against them. And Matty Cash, in that more advanced role, managed to pop up with a couple of goals. And perhaps Unai Emery was thinking something similar would come off here. So you can see the thinking behind it. This is a formation and a setup and the personnel that has found success previously in away Premier League fixtures. Unfortunately for Aston Villa, it's fair to say that we didn't start particularly well. So I have to say, not a critique of Unai Emery, I think perhaps more a critique of some of the players. It didn't really work, it's fair to say, in the first half. And in all fairness, Aston Villa did not have a fantastic first half of the game. It started off with Spurs really on top. They were really dominating us. They were really peppering the goal. We know that that Son had a couple of chances, and we also had some goalmouth scrambles. VAR wasn't working as well at the beginning of this game, which is a potential controversial point, because there was a possible, an alleged, dare I say, elbow from... I don't think there's much alleged about it. I think it was probably an elbow and a penalty, dare I say. There was an elbow from Diego Carlos on Brian Heal, I believe, not to be confused with our own former nifty left-footed winger, Carlos Heal. It probably is one that maybe we got away with. Also, the ball brushed Ezri Konsa's arm as well on as part of that movement. And that was one of the goalmouth scrambles. Kulusevski had really started well as well, and he created a good chance for Gil, and it was parried and saved by Martinez, and Porro followed up with a header, bang on his bonce, but unfortunately headed it over the bar. But Villa also had our own chances in the first half. Let's not forget, very early on, Matty Cash had a chance kind of towards the edge of the six-yard box where he's chested it, where maybe he could have gone with his head. More dramatically, there was a wonderful ball from Luca Dean, who hit one of those beautiful pinpoint crosses right onto Pau Torres's head. And unfortunately, as Pau headed it back across the goal, it went just wide, where the keeper was in absolutely no man's land. And that's another thing I want to talk about a little bit. This is a little bit of a tangent. This hasn't anything to do necessarily with the first half. But you do, or I did, see lots of the kind of combined 11s going around at the beginning of this fixture or prior to this fixture. And loads of Spurs fans had Vicario in ahead of Emi Martinez. Now, this is one of the first games I've watched Vicario for 90 minutes. And let me tell you, Spurs fans, any Spurs fans tuning in, this guy, as it stands right now, things can always change, is not fit to carry Emi Martinez's sweaty jockstrap. My goodness, these two players are not in the same league currently. But anyway, I digress. So there was lots of talk as well, obviously, about the, you know, this was billed as the battle of the high lines coming into the game, and Aston Villa's high line and the drilling of that high line and the offside trap, more importantly, worked. Yes, we know that Son did have the did have the ball in the net three times, but hey, they were all offside and they weren't close. Let's also not forget Aston Villa had the ball in the net in the first half from Ollie Watkins' header, which was also not onside, but was much, much closer, I think, than the Son ones. And if it was given, you wouldn't have probably heard too many protests from the Spurs side of things. So, unfortunately, this was kind of a game where Villa had no control to start with in the first half. It was a really end-to-end stuff. Certainly, Tottenham could have scored. Certainly, Villa could have scored. It could have been 2-2 or 3-2. But then, eventually, on the 22nd minute, the deadlock was broken. And it was a corner very similar to the one we conceded against Liverpool with Sabitzai. The ball kind of beats everyone. We fail to clear our lines. And Giovanni Lo Celso, former Unai Emery acolyte, hits a volley, which Martinez, the best goalkeeper in the world, by the way, has covered. Unfortunately, it takes a nick off of Diego Carlos's rather hulking frame. Yep. And it just spins out of Martinez's reach and nothing he can do. And it's 1-0 to Spurs. No one really to blame. I think if you're being ultra critical as a defender, I was always told, you know, if you can't clear it, leave it. Don't try and touch it because the goalkeeper can be unsighted. But I don't think you can really apportion any blame to Villa other than perhaps not clearing our lines in the first place when we had the opportunity. But then we go straight down the other end. Another wonderful Luca Dean. He's kind of like a left-footed David Beckham here. I'm thinking of David Beckham more because of this Netflix series, which is well worth a watch, by the way. Pings in a majestic cross. Ollie Watkins rises like a phoenix from the ashes, nods it into the ground just like you're supposed to, and the goalkeeper, who is not better than Emi Martinez, concedes it. And then after a long VAR check, it's ruled out for offside. And then the rest of the first half was kind of like that. It was a little bit tight. It was a little bit tetchy. Villa picks up a yellow card from Boubacar Kamara, picked up a yellow card. McGinn picked up a yellow card. And then the most important yellow card was from Matty Cash, who in receiving the yellow card, I'm trying not to laugh at this. This is in the 27th minute. He slides in on Bentancur. Unfortunately for Spurs and not so unfortunately for Aston Villa, Bentancur, the Uruguayan kind of midfield powerhouse who Villa, I think, were also linked with once upon a time, found his way back onto the treatment table where he has spent much of his Spurs career. Let's just talk about the reaction. I don't know if you've seen the reaction from some of the Spurs fans to Matty Cash for this, but it's been disproportionate, I would say. The Villa fans a few years ago, and I was included in this, had a bit of a negative reaction to Ben Mee because he ended Wesley's top flight career. You can now find Wesley, our former record signing and former Brazilian international, playing his trade at Stoke. Now, I know that lots of people had lots of thoughts about Wesley. Some thought he was not good enough. Some thought he was never going to be good enough. I happen to think, actually, for where we were, I think he'd scored 5 goals in the first half of the season before being injured by Ben Mee on New Year's Day. And I think that was pretty good for a brand new 22-year-old striker playing in a relegation-threatened team. But anyway, we digress. We'll never know if he would have been any good or not because Ben Mee finished his top-level career. Done with a scissor challenge. This challenge from Matty Cash was not that. It was not that. Was it a little rash? Sure. Was it a little bit firm? Yes, of course it was. But the reactions to Matty Cash have been way OTT from the Spurs fans, who I think need to take a little bit of a breath, a little bit of a chill pill, if you will. There's, I think, a 90s reference for you. Not to age myself. But anyway, this was very key for Aston Villa because Bentancur, in all fairness, was playing very, very well. And I dare say this yellow card, without wanting to sound morbid, was perhaps the best thing that Matty Cash contributed to this game. Matty Cash didn't play well, nor did Moussa Diaby. Both players deserved to be hooked on half time and could have both been hooked earlier. Moussa Diaby, I think, has to be careful in some of these away games where we're not doing so well, that he can be a little bit anonymous and he doesn't necessarily contribute a great deal defensively. And I think we need a little bit more from him when we're struggling. Overall, I think he's done fantastic. And Matty Cash, I think, struggled in that midfield role against Tottenham, which is a different kettle of fish to playing that midfield role, as I mentioned earlier, against Burnley. Burnley are a championship side and they will be returning to the championship pretty soon. It's clear to see. No offense to Burnley. And Tottenham are a much better outfit. I think when the game is so tactical and so technically high as this one was between Aston Villa and Tottenham at the weekend, I don't think Matty Cash can play in midfield in that type of game. I don't think he has the wherewithal on the ball or positionally to do that. But that's no great insult on Matty Cash. Obviously, he's a fantastic right back for Aston Villa and will continue to serve us, I'm sure, for many years to come. But for him to be in midfield, I think, against top level opposition in the Premier League, he's not there yet. Again, doesn't mean he never will be, but as of today, I don't think that is something that works against top level opposition. Spurs had another chance before the end of the half, but we kind of clung on a little bit, to be fair. And then, in the depths of injury time, we had a free kick. Unai Emery was conducting the concerto there from Douglas Luiz, telling him where to put the ball. Douglas Luiz puts it on a plate, and Pau Torres hits an unstoppable header into the top corner. And Aston Villa go in at the break at 1-1, when really and truly, we had absolutely no right whatsoever to be in that position. So really key, really important, really evident to me as an Aston Villa fan that we had, kind of gotten away with one there. Dare I say that? Yeah, I dare say it, because I think we'd gotten away with it a little bit of a get out of jail free card. But to go in at 1-1 at halftime was really important, really gave us a platform to build upon. Unai Emery made those two changes. And hooked Diaby, as I mentioned. In came Leon Bailey, in came Youri Tielemans, and in came control. The second half, we looked like an entirely different beast. Part of that, I think, is due to the changes, and part of this, going back to Ange Postecoglou, is he's asking these players to run a whole lot, and he's asking his players to run hard. I don't think it's a coincidence they're seeing more injuries. And I also thought, while watching the game, it was realistic that these guys, the Tottenham players, I thought to myself, these guys' legs are going to fall off around the 60 or 70 minute mark. And they did start to fall off. I think, again, credit to Postecoglou, but there are consequences to playing this variety of high octane football. And I think that the Spurs fans, on the end of three defeats, back-to-back-to-back, are beginning to smell that and see what it's cooking. And we get a better foothold in the game, much more control. We get our foot on the ball. Having Youri Tielemans, we just have an extra person who can technically control a football match, can control, pass and move, and makes the right kind of runs. He is kind of the footballing reverse of Matty Cash. They are a yin and a yang. One is like a harem scarum super athlete. The other is kind of not a super athlete, but is just wonderfully technically and beautiful on the ball. And that introduction of Youri Tielemans really helped, and it particularly helped when we score what was a brilliant goal. It looked like an innocuous build-up. Little triangles in midfield, Douglas Luiz, Boubacar Kamara, Tielemans, just keeping the ball. Doesn't look like there's a little bit, any kind of threat on. Then Ollie Watkins drops a little bit deeper, exchanges a 1-2 with Youri Tielemans. And what Watkins does beautifully here is he hits this early. The first touch is impeccable, and he hits the strike way before their goalkeeper, Vicario, not better than Emi Martinez, has any chance to set his feet or react. And the ball is in the net. And this was after, also, Leon Bailey had hit the post after that aforementioned goalkeeper had made a little bit of a fumble. So already Villa are looking good. We're cooking on gas. Everything's moving in the right direction. It's 2-1. And when we got our noses in front, you did start to believe, or I started to believe, that we had a much, much better opportunity to make sure that we could go ahead and win that game of football. And as the second half kind of went on, Spurs did push. They did have the ball in the net again. I think my cat has come to say hello. There she is. Thank you. If you want to go sit down there. That's Buffy, by the way. I would say that the second half, we just had a lot more control. Yuri Tielemans made a major impact. Leon Bailey looked threatening every time he got the ball. They couldn't cope with his pace. And it also meant that Tottenham had to adjust what they were doing because they had to worry about Leon Bailey, who was just kind of occupying that space on the right wing, out of the congested middle where everyone else was sitting. And we found him more or less every time. And he had the measure of the Tottenham back line and had them backpedaling and scared. And yes, I know this wasn't the first choice Tottenham back line, but again, you know, we can only play who we're playing, and that's kind of what it is. So Tottenham again did have another goal chalked off for offside. They did push towards the end, but Aston Villa also had our chances. Let's not forget Ollie Watkins had a goal-bound header. Ben Davis, in all fairness to him, was in the right place at the right time. Not sure he knew a great deal about it, but he had himself in the correct position, so well done to him. Ollie Watkins has nodded one in, and it's bounced off the back of his head, Davis, and kept it out of play. Ollie Watkins has also just had a narrow miss from a corner, and Boubacar Kamara has had a decent shot saved by the goalkeeper as well. So all things considered here, this was a brilliant performance. And in terms of looking at it contextually as a part of Aston Villa's season, after taking the beating that we took, and let's not mince our words, it was a beating. After taking the beating that we took against the old Newcastle United 5-1. After going to Anfield and also taking a beating there 3-0, it was really important for us to go to one of the teams towards the top of the league away from home and put in a performance. And now whilst I acknowledge, and any fair-minded fan would also acknowledge, that we had some problems in regards to Tottenham in the first half, the fact that we were able to keep them at bay, and the fact that we also had our own chances, let's not forget. There was the Cash chance. There was the Watkins disallowed goal. There was the other Pau Torres chance. It's not like we created nothing at all in the first half and it was just tin hats at dawn. It wasn't that. But even so, the fact that we weathered that storm, showed great character, and came back to win from behind, I think augurs really, really well for Aston Villa moving forward. Particularly as we look to address the gap between our home form and our away form. So, being in the top four, as now we kind of enter the busy Christmas period, is another kind of record, if you like, or thing that Unai Emery's done and broken, because it's been years and years since we were in the top four at this time of year, so deep into a season. With a third of the season gone now. Can we sustain it? Yes, we can. Will we? Time will tell. I think that the next three fixtures, away at Bournemouth, where we have a stinking record, that's a tricky one. I think that also going back-to-back within 3 days of each other with Man City and Arsenal also visiting Villa Park is tricky. But we'll talk about that on later shows. The main thing that I want to try and do, and I encourage you to do, is just every so often, you know, maybe twice a day, three times if you're feeling spicy, just go and check the table. Just look at it. Just look at that league table and see Aston Villa in fourth place and just feel good about it, because it is very, very, very good. Okay, that's enough of the Spurs stuff. We have another partnership, Aston Villa, with Unai Emery's club, but we'll talk about more of that in a later show. Very quickly, just want to come on to the midweek fixture. Our Europa League quest, Europa Conference League quest, is at Fever Pitch. If we get a point on Thursday against Legia Warsaw, Aston Villa qualify for the next round, or at least the playoff to get into the next round with a game to spare, which is wonderful news. If we win, we really put ourselves in the box seat for winning the whole group. and then we skip that naughty playoff round and go straight into the waiting arms of the Europa Conference League knockout stages. So I imagine Unai Emery will go strong. This is certainly one that we have some, I wouldn't say revenge, that might be a bit strong, but certainly we owe Legia Warsaw one after they turned us over 3-2 at their place. We conceded some absolutely shocking goals on that day. We kind of know already what the European lineup is. We imagine that we're going to see Diego Carlos and Longley. It'll be interesting to see if Moreno or Ramsey are ready to get some more minutes, or if Juan Duran, who made his reappearance against Spurs as well, also gets a bit of a look in. But I imagine they go strong, bearing in mind that we have Bournemouth away. Wouldn't be surprised to see Boubacar Kamara, considering he's suspended for that fixture on Sunday. But really looking forward to it. And we also look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning in to Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast. Please like down below and... subscribe. Up the Villa. Daly and Atkinson on one of those.